Here's one for Alessia Sanazzaro, co-founder of Chusic. Her app finds beats for happy feet. She's rocking her own business, yeah? But every leading lady needs backup. And by GoDaddy, she found it. With domain and web hosting to put her business online, now she's got investors putting their hands up in the air.
Go Chusic, GoDaddy. Taking your business online.
Wednesday, June 22nd, 2016, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we're bringing you our own sarcastic look at the world of sports every week, and we're always looking for some new listeners. So be sure to tell someone about the show. Now, if you're listening to the show right now, then I'm assuming you know how to find the show. But if you're, you know, relaying the message on to someone else, you're telling someone else about the show, there's a number of places that they can find the show. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. You can go over to Google Play. If you're not an Apple fan, go over to somewhere like Podcast Republic. And you can always send them over to rogueintel.com. You know, rogueintel.com has a number of podcasts over on their network, whether it's the Prime Podcast that you want to check out. Maybe it's Remedial Radio. Maybe it's Now That I'm Older. You are sure to find some podcasts over on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network that you will want to check out each and every week. Now, if you would like to contact The Daily Dose, we love getting your questions. We love getting your comments, getting some suggestions. In fact, you know, we have an email show coming up here in a few weeks. I'm putting together still some of the emails that I've received, some of the tweets that I get, even some of the messages that I might get on Facebook or wherever it is. So if you have some thoughts, you can send them over to us. Now, if you're not on Facebook, you're not on Twitter, I get that. You can always follow us on Facebook or on Twitter. The handle is at Daily Dose Sports. But you can email the show directly at dailydosesports@gmail.com. We might read, we might discuss your email. So make it a good one. Make sure you're bringing something to the table. And like I said, we have a show coming up in a few weeks where we will read some of the best emails that we have gotten over the past, I don't know, few weeks, few months, whatever it is. In fact, I probably should save this one for the email show. I probably should hold on to this for just a minute. But I have to read something. I have to read something that I got this past week. You know, this one is kind of cool. Let me just read an email that I got this past week. Here's what it says. Clint, I have to say that I always enjoy your fresh, insightful, and funny podcast. My name is Alonzo. I work as a business coach, and I have many basketball-related hobbies. And I live in Lima, Peru. Wait a second. Lima, Peru? Yes, the Daily Dose has made it to Lima, Peru. Yes, Daily Dose is in South America. We are growing in South America. Our South American audience, you know, we've already heard from Russia. I think I've read an email from Russia. I know I read an email once from Germany, and I had an email maybe like a year ago from Chile down in South America. Now we hear from Alonzo down in Peru. You know, I always say this. The best part about doing the Daily Dose is the listeners that I get, because the listeners that we get here at the Daily Dose are intelligent people. They actually get sports. And I'm the first to admit, we are not the rah-rah, knuckle-dragging type of sports show. In fact, if you're coming and joining the show a little bit late, you're welcome. We're glad to have you. But we have been referred to in the past as the thinking man's sports show. We try to look beyond the dumb, you know, first take sports way of thinking. And Alonzo in Peru is just another example of the kind of sports fans that we have listening to the Daily Dose all over. All over. I have to say thank you to Alonzo for reaching out, just shooting us a message. We appreciate that very, very, very much. It really is. It's genuinely appreciated that you took the time just to reach out. By the way, you know those little... You know those little GIF files? It's short for graphic interchange format or something like that. If it's graphic, then how is it a GIF file? It's a GIF file. I'm calling it a GIF file. Anyways, it takes like a short clip, and it like loops it. Well, Alonzo down in Lima, Peru, creates a bunch of those NBA, and he does NBA ones. He does a lot of NBA, the GIF files like that, and he does some really... really cool ones. You can actually check out his work. If you go over to, I think it's like NBA 80s-90s gifts, tumblr.com. It's over on Tumblr. He does some really, really cool work. And like, if you want to spend like 5 hours just watching some old clips of players from like the 80s and 90s, and I'm telling you right now, like, here, I'll get on it right now. Like, here's a clip of like Michael Jordan against the Lakers. Here's a clip of Blue Edwards from the Utah Jazz. I mean, he just puts together these clips and he does some really, really nice work. I'm telling you right now, you're sitting in your car, like you're waiting for something. You're wherever, you're not driving. You're not texting and driving. That's I'm not condoning texting and drive, but you're sitting there waiting for, I don't know, your significant other to get done in the store, whatever it might be. You want to kill some time, go over to his website. You will kill like 4 or 5 hours like that, because it's so easy to, and they're just these little quick, like 3 or 4 second clips, but they're so cool. I just sat there and looked at his site for a long time after he had messaged me. But yeah, you know, pretty fun stuff, pretty fun stuff. And would like to thank Alonzo for sending the message all the way from Lima, Peru. Hey, today on the show, of course, we will recap the NBA Finals. And what all of that meant, how that all went down, one of the craziest NBA Finals. I told you last week, I didn't think it was a very good NBA Finals. A lot of the games were played pretty poorly, at least by one team. It didn't seem like either team brought their A game to both, you know, both at the same time. Finally, in Game 7, we at least saw a close game. I don't know if it was a very pretty game, but we at least saw a close game that was kind of at least interesting. Want to talk about the NBA Finals and how that all went down. You know, the NBA draft is on Thursday night. Thursday night. I don't know how. I have no idea how that's already. I guess they're just trying to capitalize as quickly as they can. Yes, we saw you all watch the finals. Now come watch the draft quickly before you forget about us. You know, and we might have some Olympic news. Yes, don't forget the 2016 Summer Olympics begin in early August, later this summer. And there are a few things happening. You know, countries are preparing for Rio de Janeiro. Plus, as we always do here on the Daily Dose, we will have to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You always want to make sure that you stick around for that. We have got a full show coming to you today on the Daily Dose. We will get it started right after these brief messages. Stick around. We will be right back.
I say, boy, every time I gotta go get new boxing gloves for that daggone chicken hawk, I go to RogueIntel.com/Amazon. And I get him the bestest boxing gloves that Amazon can buy. Look at that, he's hitting that dog. That is the dumbest dog I've ever seen.
Hi guys, Cooper here from the Unquote Podcast. Unquote delves into what makes movie quotes so, well, quotable. See, I have a guest each week watch a movie selected from the American Film Institute's Top 100 Movie Quotes list, and then we sit down and ponder cultural impingement and cinematic preponderance, and okay, you got me, my thesaurus was totally open. A little factual and a lot of fun, it's the least contentious peanut gallery in history. Unquote is part of the Rogue Intel Network, and you can find me on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter.
What are you doing listening to Rogue Intel? That podcast is for Slytherin.
You know, the NBA Finals this year were huge. It seemed like everyone was talking about them. It was kind of funny because on Sunday, it was Father's Day. Hopefully you had a good Father's Day. Or else hopefully, I don't know, you didn't answer the door or the phone or whatever it was on Father's Day. But whatever it might have been that suited your day, hopefully you had a good Father's Day. The thing that stood out to me, I went to like a gas station on Father's Day on Sunday before the game. And I could hear people in there like, who do you got tonight? Golden State? Cleveland? Who's going? We haven't had that in a while. Like not among, maybe among basketball fans, but not against just the average person on the street. That isn't how that has gone lately. For the most part, it hasn't been where people are just like, I'm watching this. I'm watching this. It's huge. Now, everybody's was talking about it. Everybody was all over people at the store. Most viewers since the 1998 Chicago Bulls over Utah Jazz series. I want you to think about these numbers for 1 second. This year's NBA Finals had a 15.7 rating. That means they had 30.8 million viewers. Not to mention, you know, they probably got a couple hundred thousand like streaming it or something off of ESPN. 31 million viewers? I mean, game seven. Huge, huge game. 31 million viewers. Not bad for the NBA. Pretty big for the NBA. Bigger than, you know, any of the other sports, NHL, Major League Baseball, stuff like that. Pretty big. Well, okay, not bigger than the NFL, of course, but just for reference. 15.7 rating, 31 million viewers. Here's just a reference I want you to just kind of put, just store this away for later. December, week 17, this last year, the NFL season. Usually week 17 is like the playoffs are already set. You're not really playing for position, anything like that. Final regular season game of the NFL, Minnesota versus Green Bay, wasn't you know, anything huge. They pulled a 7.9 rating. They had 24 million people watching. That's just what they just roll that out. The NFL just puts a game on. Hey, we're going to have a game this week. Okay. And they get 24 million people to watch it. Like, not a game seven, not a playoff game, not a championship game, not a championship playoff game, games, you know, final game. No. Then we get 24 million. Yeah, just turn on the TV. You'll watch it. We know you'll watch it. They don't care. So, but the NBA was big. It was big. And, of course, the whole world knows by now that the Cleveland Cavaliers came from being down 3-1 against the defending champion Golden State Warriors. Beat the Warriors in seven games. The Cleveland Cavaliers are the first team in NBA history to come from down 3-1 in the finals and come back and win it. LeBron James was an absolute monster in the final three games. Some numbers for you. He is the first player in NBA history to lead all players in the series in all five categories for an entire playoff series. For the seven-game series against the Golden State Warriors, LeBron averaged 29.7 points, 11.3 rebounds, 8.9 assists, 2.3 blocks, 2.6 steals per game. He is just the third player in NBA history to put up a triple-double in Game 7. That final game, Game 7, he had 27 points, he had 11 rebounds, he had 11 assists. But, you know, what was it that the Cavaliers did to knock the Warriors off? And by the way, all the honks that are now on the Cleveland bandwagon, it's kind of funny, because going into the game, I heard a number of people like, oh yeah, Cleveland, whatever, who cares? And then after the game, they're like, oh yeah, Cleveland, I was cheering for you the whole time. Where are you? I don't think. Can we slow down? Like, I heard LeBron right after the game. No one gave us a chance. Nobody gave us a chance. We knew it was us against the world. You plowed through a god-awful Eastern Conference and never even got tested. Like, you were the top team in the East by a mile. Everyone knew you were going to the finals. Slow down. Like, we knew you were going to get to the finals. You were going to be healthy because you weren't going to play any competition the whole way there. You hadn't even gotten tested at all. So, and I said, you can go back and listen to, I said in my NBA preview, the Cavs were the more talented team. I just didn't figure their supporting players would step up. I figured players like, you know, Kyrie, Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, I figured some of those guys would probably, you know, wilt under the pressure. Few of them stepped up and played pretty well. But let's slow down on the whole, we were the mighty little underdogs that could. You were the biggest team in the East. You didn't face anyone in the East. So basically, you rolled through the postseason playing exactly one playoff series. I mean, yeah, yes. Hey, hats off to the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm very happy for the city of Cleveland. I know that a lot of people kind of think that being from Denver, the drive, the fumble, all those things. Like, Denver hates Cleveland. We don't hate Cleveland. We kind of like Cleveland. Like, we kind of are rooting for Cleveland. But slow down on the whole no one gave us a chance thing. I mean, it was pretty 50-50 going into the series. Number of people were picking Golden State, but a number of people were picking Cleveland. They had seen that Cleveland hadn't been tested. We knew that the Oklahoma City series had taken quite a bit out of the Golden State Warriors. So it wasn't exactly like they were just, you know, poor little Cleveland. How did they manage to get here? They did it for all the small schools. Calm down. It wasn't exactly how that went. And first off, why were they down 3-1 to begin with? You know, Cleveland had played one way the entire playoffs. They tried to be basically Golden State. They were coming out. They were shooting threes. They were doing a lot of shooting and that kind of thing. And that stuff works against the Detroits, against the Atlantas, against the Torontos. Yeah, that might work there. But against Golden State, you couldn't out-warrior the Warriors. So let's take a look at how Cleveland came back and won this series. Because there are a few ways that they actually did this. Here are the things that changed. They were down 3-1. We talked about this a couple times. It looked like this series was over. No chance they're going to come back from 3-1. No one's ever done it. And it certainly didn't look like they were going to be the first team to do it. But here are the things that changed that allowed Cleveland to get back in the series and then come back and win it. First and foremost, the NBA suspended Warriors forward Draymond Green. Let's be real clear about that. It was 3-1, and they decided then, let's suspend Draymond Green. Now, if they have Draymond and they're going back to Golden State, yes, they had lost Andrew Bogut or whatever, going back to Golden State, they would have closed that series out. The series was over. The NBA prolonged the series. They suspended Draymond Green. And they gave a little bit of life to the Cavaliers. Cavaliers survived the game back at Golden State. They get the win there. They get off the ropes. And now they're back in business. But don't ever underestimate what that did for them. We talked a little bit about conspiracies last week. I'm not sitting here saying it was completely filthy. I'm not sitting here saying, but did they dictate a little bit of the outcome of this series? Sure they did. Because the series would have been over if they hadn't suspended Draymond. That would have ended it. The second thing that Cleveland started doing, they stopped settling for those long shots. LeBron James, we always hear about LeBron James. He's so much bigger. He's so much stronger. He's so this. He's so that. No one physically, there's no way Michael Jordan could hold up with LeBron James. But he doesn't always play that way. For as big and as strong as LeBron James is, he goes down like a European soccer player half the time. We saw it again on Sunday, right at the very end of the game. He dropped like he got hit by sniper fire. Get up, big fella. You're bigger and stronger. But we saw in those last three games, LeBron James started going to the basket. You know, a good barometer to tell when teams are settling from the outside and when they're going to the basket is usually how many free throws are you shooting? In game one, LeBron James shot 4 free throws. They lost. In game two, he shot 4 free throws. They lost. He shot 5 in game three, and they won. But remember, in that game three, they were hitting everything from outside. Everything Cleveland threw up just went in. In game four, LeBron James shot 4 free throws, and they lost again. Now it's looking like, hey, this might be over. This might be over. And then games 5, 6, and 7, he shot 8, 8, and 10 free throws. Now, we can sit here and argue about should all those calls have been called. That's not what I'm saying. He changed his mentality. He started attacking the basket, and the Cleveland Cavaliers stopped settling for outside shots. When you have a big, strong guy like LeBron James, what in the world are you doing? Shooting these 19, 25-foot pull-up fadeaway jumper? It doesn't make any sense. He started going inside. They started to get more from their role players. J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, Iman Shumpert. They outplayed the Festus Ezeli's, the Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes, by the way, brief side note with Harrison Barnes. He's always open. Did you notice how many times he's open? Like any time that Golden State needed a big play, you're like, Harrison Barnes is wide open. Yeah, there's a reason. It's because they want you to shoot it. I remember I was coaching one year. We had one kid. Nice kid. Scrappy little kid. He's quick. Wasn't a shooter. Couldn't shoot. Like, couldn't score 20 in an empty gym, let alone with the lights on and, you know, other players. But he was always open. And we would pull him to the side and we were like, hey, you can't shoot that. But coach, I'm open. Yes, we know. They're leaving you open. They want you to shoot the ball. That was exactly what I thought of when I saw Harrison Barnes. He was always open. Didn't it seem like, hey, we're down by a point. We're down by two. We need a big bucket. Steph, come on, get open. Klay Thompson, come on, you got to do something. Get it to Draymond. Get it. Harrison Barnes is why he's out there by himself again. Why is he always open? And Harrison Barnes is like, guys, I got this. I'm open. I'm wide open. I don't know how they made this mistake, but somehow they forgot to cover me. No, they didn't forget. They wanted to not cover you. They're hoping you shoot it. And you kept shooting it and shooting it and shooting it and missing and missing and missing. And then you had Anderson Varejão. the big guy for Golden State. Now he's a flopper. Vergeau's just flopping all over, speaking of European soccer players. But I think a little bit of the bias we have against Vergeau is his hair. Like, as soon as you see Vergeau, you look, it's like kind of the European, kind of the soft curls, and you're just like, I'm not giving him a call. And he's kind of soft. And there were a couple times, yes, there was the one time he got hit, like someone brushed the side of his ear, and he acted like he took a bullet in the side of his cranium. But there were a couple times I actually saw him get fouled, and you could see the ref like, nope, fooled me once. He's like the boy that cried wolf, but he's the boy that flopped too many times. He couldn't get a call to save his life. They could have punched Vergeau in the stomach. They could have just flat out punched him, and the ref would have been like, I don't know. Maybe he got fouled. I'm not really sure. But I'm telling you, it's because of his hair. Like that, just that hair right off the beat. You're like, he's kind of soft. He's probably pretending. He kind of looks like a soccer player. That didn't help him one bit. And then Kyrie Irving was absolutely spectacular. Legitimately, and I don't want to take away from what LeBron did, because LeBron was fantastic in the last three games. But Kyrie Irving, you could have made a case he was the co-MVP. Don't forget that in the deciding game, with the biggest game, with everything on the line, it wasn't LeBron James that hit the three that put them up. It was Kyrie Irving. LeBron had the block, and I know that all anybody shows is, oh, look at the block he had. Look at this block. Oh, he blocked the shot on Andre Iguodala, could have taken the lead, and he pins it up again. It was Kyrie that hit the shot. It was Kyrie that made the big shot to win the series. He could have been co-MVP. Another reason that Cleveland was able to get back in, you could just see the Warriors started to feel the pressure late. All the 73-9 talk, all the up 3-1 talk, you could see it kind of started to fall on their shoulders. This is one of the greatest offensive teams in the history of the NBA, right? Yet they didn't score a single point in the final 4 minutes and 39 seconds of Game 7. They were 0-9 with one offensive board. You can't tell me they were starting to feel a little bit. All the pressure, when you're in a series like that, when you're in a game like that, where you're expected to win, the later it goes, the tighter it is, all the pressure starts to go onto the favorites. And they were the favorite in their own building. In Game 7, hey, you're playing at home, you're in front of your home crowd, they started feeling the pressure a little bit because they couldn't make a shot to save their life. And the last reason I really think that Cleveland came back and was able to win that series, they absolutely wore down Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson. They were physical with them. They forced them to defend. They attacked them defensively again and again and again. How many times did we see a screen and roll to force Klay or Steph to either have to defend LeBron or Kyrie? And as a result, we could see what happened at the other end. Remember what I told you? It's really, really hard to guard a moving target. It's hard to guard Steph Curry when he's running around. He's coming off screens. He's cutting between people. He's circling off of a staggered screen, and he's curl cutting, and you're trying to chase him. Oh, man, this guy's driving me crazy. He just won't stop moving. But remember, in order to move, you've got to have some legs. Now, I will say this. The Cavaliers held both of those guys quite a bit. And it didn't always get called, and you take your chances. You hold them and see if they're going to call it. There were a lot of times they got held, but you could see that they just had no legs. The longer the series went, got to a Game 7, got late in Game 7, and suddenly Steph and Klay, they don't have any legs. They're run down. They're tired. And a jump-shooting team, well, that jumper starts to go away the more tired you get. You have to have a little bit of legs. You have to have a little bit of explosion to get open. You could see late in that game, the Cleveland Cavaliers at times were full face guarding Steph Curry with Tristan Thompson. Not with a guard, not with Shumpert, not with one of their best defenders, with Tristan Thompson, their big man. And they just let him use his wingspan to deny passing lanes and just say, well, hey, we'll take our chances. We don't think you have the legs to beat him. And the longer the series went, and the more he started to get worn down, and who knows if Steph is injured. I know there's a lot of talk. Maybe Steph Curry has an injury. Maybe he has a shoulder issue. We may find out. I don't have any idea if there's something wrong with Steph Curry. But I know this. He was worn down by the end of that series. He was absolutely worn down. He had nothing left. Neither him or Klay did. So LeBron James delivers on his promise to deliver a championship to the city of Cleveland. You know, it's kind of funny. Because, and I've said here on the show, I've been a critic of LeBron James. And I'll be honest, I don't know if I see that changing anytime soon. You know, there are certain aspects about LeBron that kind of rub certain people the wrong way. Sometimes they kind of rub me, at least, the wrong way. And did you see the Instagram post that he threw up? LeBron had a picture. He had the trophy. He's just holding the trophy. He's got a hat on. And here's what the post said. If you missed it, LeBron posted this on Instagram. It said, "They said you lost a step, wasn't explosive as once was. The best days was in the real view. Questioned your drive, your leadership, your commitment. You don't have killer instinct. Going back home is the worst mistake in your career. He got the coach fired. Players traded. Won't work between him and Kyrie. Him and Kev won't work. Love your teammates too much. There's no way he can deliver a championship in his hometown, etc., etc., etc. But guess what? That's none of my business. Hashtag strive for greatness. Hashtag this one is for the land. Hashtag put some respect on my name. Ha ha ha. Yes, sir." I've got to be honest. And he had a phenomenal series. He was excellent the last three games. He couldn't have played much better than he did. And yet this post is kind of what rubs me the wrong way about LeBron James, isn't it? First off, you did get your coach fired. I still don't know if it works between you and Kevin Love. I mean, the fact that it crosses his, like, he is the, just, he's the, like, penultimate millennial player. Like, he's worried so much. Like, I can just see LeBron James, like, going on Twitter and, like, searching his name. He's like, what are people saying about me? Why would they say that? Can you imagine, like, Larry Bird going on Instagram and be like, "They said that me and Kevin McHale would never work. They said that I couldn't shoot like that. They said that me and Danny Ainge..." Get out of here! I know, it's just it's the era we live in, but the fact that he's so worried about what people say that he jumps on Instagram and put, like, "You're not 14! It's just, that's the kind of stuff, I guess, that kind of rubs people the wrong way. I'm not saying he's not talented. I'm not saying that he's not one of the greatest players. I'm not saying that. You're kind of like the cover boy for, like, millennial magazine. Like, you and like a 13-year-old kid crying because you don't get enough hugs for all the hard work you do. I guess, but I mean, you went out and played basketball. Slow your roll there, big fella. But he did deliver on his promise. He delivered a championship to Cleveland. I give him that. He brought a championship to Cleveland. It has been since 1964 that the city of Cleveland has had a championship team. And back in 64, the highest salary in the NFL at the time was $50,000 a year. And that was being paid to Cleveland Browns running back Jim Brown. The Browns beat the Baltimore Colts in the NFL championship. $50,000 a year. Clear back to 1964. That's like what, Lyndon B. Johnson is president? And a young man named LeBron James still had a full hairline. I mean, that's going back a ways, is what I'm saying. That's going back a ways. You know, we still have a number of sports droughts. Cleveland now, I wonder how Browns fans feel. Like, are Browns fans like, yeah, we finally got a championship. Cleveland's back in the championship. Or are they just like, I mean, we still don't have anything to hang our hat on. I know, for me personally, I know that being a longtime Denver Broncos fan, in 96, when the Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup, I was like, it's cool. Don't get me wrong. It was fun. We hadn't had, you know, big time hockey in the city of Denver. And so that was kind of cool. But for me, I was like, yeah, but it's still about the Broncos to me. So I can't imagine that Cleveland Browns fans are feeling that, where they're just like, yes, finally, city of Cleveland vindicated. For all those tough, I don't think so. You know, we still have a number of sports droughts going around, though. In Major League Baseball, the Chicago Cubs have not won a World Series since 1908. They have not even been to the World Series since 1945. And the next closest team to them, the Cleveland Indians, who last were in the World Series in 1948. Cleveland's still right there in the middle of the map on the drought list. In the NHL, the Toronto Maple Leafs have not even appeared in a Stanley Cup final since 1967, and the St. Louis Blues have never won a cup in 49 years. In the NBA, there are 12 teams that have never won a championship. Phoenix, Atlanta, Indiana, of course, our Denver Nuggets have had 42 seasons without a championship. Utah, Sacramento, Orlando, Charlotte, Toronto, New Orleans, Memphis, and Oklahoma City never won a championship. 12 teams. And in the NFL, four teams have never even been to a Super Bowl. Forget winning the thing. Four teams have never even been to a Super Bowl. The Detroit Lions in 58 years have never been to a Super Bowl. The Cleveland Browns, never been to a Super Bowl. They won a championship back when, I don't know, you like had a Civil War battle or whatever it was. But they've been 43 years, never been to a Super Bowl. Jacksonville Jaguars, of course, just 21 years, but they've never been to a Super Bowl. And the Houston Texans have never been to a Super Bowl. And finally, the Buffalo Bills have the longest active drought without making the playoffs. Do you realize it has been 16 years since they've even made the postseason? And I got to be honest, I'm looking at what Rex Ryan is doing right there, and he's talking about how they won the offseason this year. And I'm looking at Buffalo like, I don't know. It might be another 16 years before you make the postseason. They haven't been to the postseason since they lost the Music City Miracle back to the Tennessee Titans. What is that, 1999 or something? It's been a rough go of it for the Buffalo Bills. I know we have some Bills fans that listen. Yeah, it's been a little bit tough. Like I said earlier, the NBA draft is coming up on Thursday night in Brooklyn. Doesn't it seem like the NBA finals just ended? I mean, already the NBA? Oh yeah, they did just end. The NBA draft will be coming to you Thursday night in Brooklyn, and the Philadelphia 76ers have the number one pick. Philadelphia 76ers, again, what is this, like the fourth, fifth, eighth, ninth year in a row that they have the number one pick? Most likely they're going to select LSU forward Ben Simmons. He's drawn some comparisons, actually, to LeBron James. Ben Simmons, 6'10 kid. He can handle it. He's a very good passer. He can see over the defense. He's very, very good at finishing around the basket. I don't know if he can shoot. He can't be any worse of a shooter. He basically hasn't shot much. So we'll see. You know, I don't think that Philadelphia can afford to pass him up. The problem is he is kind of putting out that vibe that he doesn't want Philly to draft him. He really wants to go be a Laker. He really wants the Los Angeles Lakers to take him, but he's got to convince Philadelphia to not take him. And I don't know if he can do that. The good thing about, you know, he was down at LSU, they weren't very good. They were just barely above 500. They didn't make the tournament. It's not going to be a huge drastic change for him to go to like Philadelphia or go to the Lakers and, you know, lose a lot of games. He's like, yeah, I'm kind of used to losing every single night. The Los Angeles Lakers do pick number two. Most likely, they'll take the 6'9 forward, Brandon Ingram, kid out of Duke. Really, really. I mean, for being 6'9, really good shooter outside. He can tear things up outside. And then the Boston Celtics have the number three pick in the draft. I know there's a couple different ways they go. I think that they could actually take the 7-foot Bosnian kid, Dragan Bender, hoping that he's going to be like that next Kristaps Porzingis kind of kid. He's a 7-footer. He can shoot from outside. He's a very good passer. He can handle the ball just a little bit. So they're hoping that they'll get him. And also because, I mean, Boston really likes white players, you know. I mean, we can spin that however we want. But let's be honest, all those folks up in Boston, they're like, yes, we do cheer for the white guys a little bit louder, don't we? So who's your team going to take? If you have a favorite NBA team, you should head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. I actually wrote a mock draft, and it kind of gives each pick in the first round and gives an idea of who your team might take. So you ought to head over there and check that out. Again, that is dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You know, the safest pick of the draft, and a couple of players that I like, that I really like in this year's draft, safest pick might be Jamal Murray, the guard out of Kentucky. That kid can handle it. He can shoot it. He's a really, really good shooter, but he's a good enough shooter that if you aren't honest, he can go around you and drive inside and finish. I don't know if he's going to be a superstar, but he's probably a guy that won't be a bust. He's very steady. He works very hard. Jamal Murray might be a nice pickup. I really like Oklahoma guard Buddy Hield. He is instant offense. Whoever gets him is going to get some scoring. Yes, we saw what Villanova did to him. They trapped him. They forced him to dribble, and he was dribbling the ball off his foot and having all kinds of problems. He will get better at that. And he's also not going to be playing in a situation where, you know, all five guys come trap him and force him to put it on the floor the way that he was forced to against Villanova. He didn't have the help. I'll give you another player I like. And I don't know if you know his story, but point guard Chris Dunn out of Providence, he should be a solid starter. If you don't know his story, and I won't go completely into it, but Chris Dunn, him and his father kind of, they became, his father became separated from the family, went and was living elsewhere. His mother became incarcerated and was taken to jail. It was him and his older brother, and they're like 11 and like 7, and they are staying in the apartment that his mom had, hiding from, like, you know, social services and the police and anybody that's going to come ask. And they're basically not going to school. They're trying to raise each other. They're trying not to get, because they had said they didn't want to get separated. And so this is a kid that learned how to take care of himself at a very, very early age. He was sneaking off to the park and trying to play basketball and earn some money. So he'd be betting people playing basketball, trying to earn some extra money. He was living at home by himself at like 9 years old. This is a kid who has worked very hard to get in the situation. He's a pretty good kid. Dad ended up coming back into his life, kind of getting his life back under control. Mom ended up getting sick, and he's been through a lot. But this is a guy that is a good leader. He learned how to be tough. He learned how to be a leader, living the life that he did. Very, very good at finding his teammates. Very good at finding his teammates in the right situations. I really like Chris Dunn out of Providence. I know that Michigan State guard Denzel Valentine has been falling down draft boards. I'm telling you, Denzel Valentine is a top five pick to me. Don't let that first round loss to Middle Tennessee throw you off. Valentine can flat out play, and I think he'll be a very solid player in the NBA for a while. I don't know if he's going to be a superstar, but he's going to be very, very, very good. The thing about the draft this year, I'm not sure there's a franchise changer in the NBA draft this year, but there could be some very good players. You might not be able to rebuild your team and, hey, we have a Shaq this year or we have a LeBron this year, but you can get very, very good role players in this draft. And think of role players in the NBA today. The finals was just played by one star in LeBron James and a bunch of different role players. And when they came out, a lot of these guys you'd never heard. Kyrie Irving was supposed to be, we think he's going to be pretty good. He's kind of undersized, but we think he's going to be pretty good. Tristan Thompson, nobody really knew about him. Guys like J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, even Steph Curry. Remember, they looked at Steph Curry and said, he's too skinny. He's got ankle problems. He's not going to be. Klay Thompson, who was looking at Klay Thompson saying he's going to be a superstar? Not at all. So you never know what you're going to get in the NBA draft. Keep an eye on that. You know, I probably shouldn't have done it, and I probably definitely shouldn't admit it. I started watching the O.J. Simpson documentary, The Made in America, that came out. ESPN put it out, and they put it out in, like, I don't know, 37 episodes, and it's like 57 hours. I feel like I'm watching a Lord of the Rings movie, but and I'll be honest, it's way too long. It's about two episodes too long. If you want to watch the O.J. Simpson thing, Made in America, just skip the first two episodes. And then from that point on, then you'll start to go, oh yeah, that's pretty interesting. I'm learning some things. Up until that point, they're really just telling us stuff we already know. They're really just regurgitating the same old stuff. Yeah, we already know that. Oh yeah, he went to USC. Oh yeah, we already knew that. Oh yeah, he was worshipped by a lunch. Yeah. Oh yeah, he started to think about his career after. We already knew that. It felt like ESPN was like, let's release this thing during the NBA Finals. And what we want to do is we want to have it like a 57-part series. And we're going to just, you know, blow it up during the finals. And we'll try to get more and more people to watch it. And we'll release it on Netflix. And we'll do all the, it's too long. I think there's five episodes. I don't know. Maybe there's seven. I don't know. Maybe there's 11. Whatever it is, skip the first two and you'll get to the good stuff. Dustin Johnson won the U.S. Open on Sunday. Now, I know, yes, the Daily Dose is talking about golf. Just a little bit. Hold on. Don't hit fast forward and don't stop the podcast. Dustin Johnson won the U.S. Open. And the reason that I bring that up is because he won the U.S. Open despite the fact that the U.S. Golf Association completely botched the way they handled a penalty against Johnson on the fifth hole on Sunday. So if you missed it, and you probably did because, you know, nobody watches golf, but he goes up, he's looking at getting ready to take a putt. His ball is sitting there on the green, and he's kind of practicing. He's behind it. His ball rolls like, I don't know, a quarter of an inch backwards. Now, how he could get the ball from behind it to go backward, it just rolled. I think it was just like gravity. Like, he didn't touch it. If he touches it, it goes forward. It doesn't go backwards. It barely rolls backwards. So the U.S. Golfing Association, they're like, well, should we penalize him? I don't know. I don't know if we should penalize him or not. Well, let's discuss it. Let's look at the... So they're looking at these slow motion replays. Meanwhile, he doesn't know if he's going to be penalized a stroke or not. So they're just looking at it, and they don't announce it until like the very end. Even when the coverage had ended, we were like, well, he won, but we don't know if they're going to penalize him or not. And then they finally announced, oh, they are going to penalize him. You make the announcement. Like, either he's penalized or he's not. You don't get to announce it in like 5 days when you feel like it, because then it feels like it's kind of fixed. You don't just, you're not the NBA. Who do you think you are? Who in the world do you think you are? You're not the NBA. Team USA is facing Argentina tonight in Copa America. Yes, we're talking soccer on the Daily Dose too. Are you into the Copa tournament? You know, the Copa tournament, it's the best players and the best teams in the Americas, North and South America. I know there's not much else on for you to watch. And I'm going to be honest, they play Argentina tonight, so I'm fully expecting us to get thumped tonight. But are you watching it? Because there's nothing else. Like, it's that or baseball. Either way, you're probably ended up taking a nap. But I have a little bit of caution about Team USA tonight. They're playing Argentina. Argentina gets it. Like, Argentina is one of the best teams in the world. And everyone that's in the Copa tournament, they all say the same thing. Well, this Copa tournament's actually a lot bigger than the Olympics. Is it really? Because it doesn't feel like it is. I guess. It's bigger because that's what you're in, but I don't think it really is. USA, my biggest problem with Team USA, and they're winning, they've played pretty well, but they haven't played anyone. They beat Ecuador to get to the semifinals. They're in the semifinals. But beating Ecuador, is that really? I mean, who's Ecuador? So tonight, USA versus Argentina. Team USA versus Messi. And I would expect that it will probably get messy. I don't think they can hang with Argentina, but I guess we'll see. Like I said earlier, the 2016 Summer Olympics are going to begin in August. And while no one knows what stories are going to develop, you know, the stars that are going to emerge, kind of the human interest stories that come out of the Olympics, who's going to win, I don't know all of that. I have no idea what's going to come out of the Olympics this year. And then usually nobody else does either. Let's be honest. It's the Olympics. We don't care about most of these sports other than the Olympics. Like, are you really going home and being like, dude, I got to watch the swimming today. There's some swimming relays on today. I got to get home. Hey fellas, I know we're going to hit the bar pretty hard tonight, but there's some women's gymnastics. I got to get home. But come Olympics, I'm like an expert. Like, I'm watching the diving. Like, well, yeah, but they didn't tuck their head exactly. I don't have any idea what I'm talking about. Neither do you. But come the Olympics, we actually care about it. We don't know who's going to win. We don't know, you know, the stories that are kind of going to come out of the Olympics. But I'll tell you this, I do know who's not going to win. The entire Russian track and field team has been banned for doping. The whole team, men and women, all of them banned from Rio for doping. What in the world is going on in Russia right now? Are they just handing out these drugs like Tic Tacs? Like, you know, when you go to the restaurant and you come out and you get a mint, they're handing like blood thinners out. What is going on in Russia? Remember, it wasn't too long ago, the amateur hockey team all got banned from like an international play. And then Maria Sharapova got banned. She's suspended for a while. Now the entire Russian track and field team is not even allowed to come to Rio. They're going to try on an individual basis to appeal that decision if they tested clean. But basically Rio said, hey, there's too many of you that have tested positive. You guys are not coming. Which, when you think about it, basically means that the Olympic Committee has determined that the Russians are more of a threat in Rio than the Zika virus. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You know, with Golden State finishing an amazing regular season and then falling short in the championship, I decided to count down the Daily Dose top five seasons that did not end in a championship. Do the Warriors make the list? I mean, they're really, really fresh. Do the Warriors make it? Let's take a look at our Daily Dose top five. Top five best seasons that did not end in a championship. Number five on our list, got to be the 2001 Seattle Mariners. You know, Seattle hosted the All-Star game in 2001. And on that All-Star game, the Mariners had eight players on their roster. Of course, they had Ichiro, they had Brett Boone, John Olerud, Edgar Martinez, Mike Cameron, Freddie Garcia, Jeff Nelson, Kazuhiro Sasaki. I mean, they were loaded. The Mariners started off the season 63-24. They led the AL West by 19 games. And so when they came out of the All-Star break, you're like, well, they'll cool down. I mean, no one can play at that high of a level. No, they actually started playing better. They were 17-6 after their first 23 after the break. They were absolutely rolling. And it seemed like every move that the Mariners made was right. They had the right pitching at the right time. They came through with the clutch hits at the right time. They finished the season with a Major League Baseball record, 116-46 record. 116? Absolutely incredible. Everything they did was right. But then they hit the postseason. And you started to get a little bit worried. They lost to the Indians a couple times. They ended up winning in five. And then they played the Yankees. And the Yankees that season were like 95-65. Solid, but nothing great. And you're like, hey, the Mariners are going to do this. They're going to go on to the series. Here we go. And then all of a sudden, they lost in five games to the New York Yankees. And it wasn't like the Yankees were great because they ended up going on to play Arizona in the World Series and getting beat themselves. But the Seattle Mariners could do no wrong in the regular season. And then they hit the postseason, and it all went away very, very quickly. They are number five on our list. Number four on our list, best seasons that didn't end with a ring, the 1996 Detroit Red Wings. The Red Wings won 62 games. They broke the record of 60 that was set by the 76-77 Montreal Canadiens. They put up 131 points. Now, some of it, to be fair, some of it was because they did play in a soft division that year. But they were absolutely loaded. When you think of that Detroit Red Wings team, Sergei Fedorov, Vladimir Konstantinov, Chris Osgood, Stevie Yzerman, Paul Coffey, they finished first in the West, in the Western Conference. They were first. They were 37 points ahead of second. And then in the Western Conference Finals, they faced the Colorado Avalanche. And the Colorado Avalanche, they were this team that had just come from Quebec, had just come to Colorado. But they had that hot goaltender in Patrick Waugh, and he shut down everything. The Red Wings lost in six. End of the season. Best season ever in the NHL. Ended. Didn't even make it to the finals. Now, unlike Seattle, because when Seattle lost, you know, to the Yankees, they never really quite got that back. The Red Wings bounced back. In fact, the Red Wings came back to win three of the next six Stanley Cups. So you can bounce back from that. You usually have to reload. You usually have to bring in a little more talent. But the Red Wings in 96 did not end with the Stanley Cup. Number three on our list has to be the 1991 UNLV college basketball team. You know, they won the title in 1990. They beat Duke. And they blew Duke out. And then in 91, this team was rolling. You had Larry Johnson. You had Stacey Augmon. You had Anderson Hunt. You had Greg Anthony. They could put up points. They could trap you. They could give you problems. They were 34-0. And they made it to the Final Four where they were going to face the same Duke team that they had beat the year before in the championship by 30. But now there's a little bit of a problem. Because Duke was more experienced. They weren't scared to death of UNLV anymore. They had seen the best they had to offer the year before. And UNLV, they were pretty full of themselves. The story is that Jerry Tarkanian had walked them through it, walked through, and had looked at the way they were carrying themselves and said, you guys don't understand. This team is going to come out and beat you. Yeah, yeah, whatever, coach. Don't worry. We got it. What's wrong with coach? What is he thinking? And you could see early on, Duke was not going to go away. Bobby Hurley hit some huge shots. Christian Laettner absolutely outplayed Larry Johnson. And down the stretch, when Duke found ways to manufacture points and get much-needed buckets, it was UNLV that was melting down. And on the very last possession, you see Larry Johnson get the ball out top. He kind of doesn't know what to do with it. He's kind of feeling the pressure. He's looking for Anderson Hunt because Anderson Hunt, bizarrely, was the guy keeping him in the game. You would think, in the biggest game, get it to Larry Johnson. He'll take over. No, he's looking for Anderson Hunt. I gotta get him the ball. They didn't even get a decent shot up at the end, and the Duke Blue Devils knock off one of the greatest college basketball teams ever. Las Vegas goes 34-1 and did not repeat as national championships. They are number three on our list. Number two, got to be the 2007 New England Patriots. Remember the Patriots went 16-0? They were just the fourth team in NFL history, and they were the first team since the 72 Miami Dolphins. They were beating teams by an average of 37-17. They beat the Jaguars in the divisional round. They beat the San Diego Chargers in the AFC Championship. Now the New England Patriots are 18-0. They're going to face the 10-6 Giants, who are a wild card team that they had already beaten at the end of the season. And the Giants, I mean, it's Eli Manning. Yeah, they have some defense, but they're not going to be able to hang with Tom Brady in this explosive offense. Except that the Giants' defense beat Tom Brady up. That's kind of what the Denver Bronco team, when they played him this last year in the championship game, it reminded me of that game. They just were physical. They just beat him up. They kept hitting him and hitting him and hitting him. And a team that was averaging 37 points scored just 14 in the Super Bowl, and the Giants beat the Patriots 17-14. So what is number one on our list? What could possibly be number one? On the Daily Dose top five best seasons that didn't end in a championship, sorry, folks, it's got to be the 2016 Golden State Warriors. Why? Because unlike UNLV and the New England Patriots, this isn't a one-game thing. It was a seven-game series. And unlike the Red Wings and the Seattle Mariners, people actually, you know, watched this series. You know, the Warriors went 73-9. They surpassed the 96 Chicago Bulls that went 72-10 and set the record for greatest regular season ever in the NBA. But after they lost just 9 games all season, they lost 9 games in the postseason alone. Now, what is next for the Golden State Warriors? I think they probably need to do a little bit of work on that roster. I think they might have to change a few things around, but we will see. We've seen teams that fall apart after they lose something like this, and we've seen teams like the Red Wings, even the Patriots, that came back and actually, you know, still competed at a very, very high level. We'll see what the future holds for the Golden State Warriors. Hey, next week, we'll recap the NBA season. Take a look back. Take a look at the NBA draft. We might have to hand out a few awards. You know how we do, Daily Dose style. We'll hand out a few things and recap and finish off the NBA season. We might have to talk a little about Copa, and we'll see how this game goes tonight. Might have to discuss a little bit of soccer. Plus, it seems like the NFL and college football are already starting to be in the headlines more and more and more. And we do have Major League Baseball going. Yes, I realize the season lasts about, you know, 160 games too long, but we might have to talk just a little bit of Major League Baseball. And of course, as we always do, you always want to make sure that you stick around for our Daily Dose Top 5. We do it every single week. And every single week, if I'm going to get comments on something, I usually get comments on the Daily Dose Top 5. You always got to be sure that you stick around for that. Hey, if you get a chance, head over to wherever it is that you download the podcast from, whether that's on iTunes, whether that's on Stitcher. Maybe you just go directly to rogueintel.com. Just stop by the forum page. Go by the Daily Dose forum page and just say, hey, love the podcast. We would appreciate hearing from you so much, and it does give us a chance to get heard by a few more people. And as I've told you before, the bigger we get, the better we get, and the more stuff we can do. So if you get a chance, please head over and do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Enjoy the week, everybody. I will see you all next week.